Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Okay, sorry. Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, September 19th. I'm Alan Chartok. Underwriting support for Medical Monday comes from Colby Attorney Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyServices.com. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Chi Chung of CHP Adams Internists. Dr. Chung specializes in caring for patients with obesity and chronic weight problems, a board-certified internist. Dr. Chung also works with dietitians, nutritionists, and others to help patients with wellness and lifestyle issues. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Want to hear from you? Your show? Start dialing. Hello, once again, welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 35% of U.S. adults are obese, and medical costs for those adults is over $1,400 higher than for those of normal weight. Joining us on this Medical Monday to talk about treating and controlling obesity, as well as anything you want to ask about internal medicine, is Dr. Chi Chung of Community Health Programs Adams Internists in North Berkshire County. CHP is a federally qualified health program with 7 practice locations in the Berkshires. Last year, Dr. Chung earned certification as an obesity specialist from the American Board of Obesity Medicine. He works closely with dietitians, nutritionists, and others who assist patients with wellness and lifestyle issues. You can call us at 1-800-348-2551, and you better do it early. This is going to be a very popular program. 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Chung, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Where'd you go to medical school?
I went to University of Illinois in near Chicago.
Indeed.
Yes. And after that, I went to residency at Yale. And then,
so you're a smart guy.
Every medical students who get into medical schools are smart. So I'm not any smarter than the rest of them.
You're a good man, and I appreciate your coming all the way over here to see us. So let's talk a little bit about weight, if we can. Is it so that as you get older, you're more likely to gain weight?
It is generally the trend. As people get older, their weight tends to increase, oftentimes rather slowly, 1 or 2 pounds a year, and then over a course of many years, their weight increase. I think part of the reason is that the habit of hasn't changed, the eating habit hasn't changed much, whereas as they age, their activity levels start to drop. So people start to increase in weight. Some studies have suggested that one of the reasons why we have such a big obesity epidemics over the last several decades because the amount of activity that people do over the course of their everyday has declined slowly.
Got it. So, you know, I noticed that if I can eat, you know, there's the old poem about paupers and breakfast like a king and dinner like a pauper. I find that's true. If I can keep my weight down if I have a fairly substantial breakfast every day. I have a porridge with an egg white on it. And then for lunch, you know, I can have something not terribly challenging. But for dinner, that's when it really makes a difference for me. What do you think about that?
We tend to eat very fast. So breakfast, I tend not to eat very much, but I understand that in between meals, there's a lot of opportunity for snacks here and there, especially at work when you're in the busy lifestyles. And snacks, some of those snacks have a large caloric content in it. And for dinner, I oftentimes, if I eat slower, instead of taking 5 minutes to eat it all, I take a little longer time, and my body will tell me I'm full. So I don't have to eat the full plate or even whatever is in front of me. There's hormones in the gut, in the stomach, and in the small intestines. That takes about 15 minutes to tell you that you're full. So if you eat in 5 minutes, then it's too late to
you
take that
back. You beat the curve. That's great.
So eating slower helps. And I find that in the middle of the day, having fruits and drinking a cup of tea may tie you over until dinner time.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. Okay. Jim, you're on. Go ahead.
Have spices help in the prevention of obesity?
I couldn't understand you. Usually I can understand what you're talking about, Jim, but not today. You want us to try to learn?
How do spices help with the prevention of obesity?
How do spices resolve with prevention of obesity?
There's no particular spice that would prevent people from gaining weight. One of the spices we love to use, and I don't think we consider that a spice, is sugar. The World Health Organization only limits 25 grams of sugar for the whole day. Now, 25 grams is about 6 teaspoons of sugar. Most people put 2 teaspoons in the coffee or even more, and some breakfast like Raisin Bran has 18 grams of sugar. So as you can see, if you just control your sugar, and I sometimes tell my patient, instead of having them count calories, I say, why don't we just watch the sugar, because it's easier to count up to 25 than up to 1,000 or 2,000 calories. They will start losing a few pounds.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And of course, we have a real diabetic nightmare on our hands in this country because of too much sugar, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it. We put a lot of sugars in food, even food that you don't think has sugar in them. The food industries, I'm not saying they're bad people, they like to make their food taste good. That's their job. Their job is to sell food, and they like to make people come back and buy their particular food. And they notice that if they put a small amount of sugar in there, it makes it taste delicious, and so they can sell more food. Now, but over the course of the day, if you eat a lot of these prepared food, a small amount of sugar will add up to more sugar than a person actually needs.
Are you finding more diabetics in your practice?
It is a true epidemic in my office. There's so many diabetic patients, and it's hard to count them.
And what is that about? You think that there are more now, or that we're just discovering that there are more now?
I think there are more now. As you know, I have young patients and old patients. Most of them are older patients. Many of them who are overweight tends to have diabetes or pre-diabetes. The younger patients, even if they are significantly overweight, they tend to have well-controlled sugars. I still tell them to try to limit the sugar intake, to try to lose a few pounds. And there's some debate in the community as whether healthy, obese patient needs to lose weight versus, because they haven't got hypertension, they haven't got diabetes, they don't have heart disease. But the statistic seems to suggest that people who are overweight and people who are obese have a significant increase of cardiovascular mortality decades down the road compared with people who maintain their weight in the normal range.
So is obesity plus smoking raising that risk factor even more?
Smoking alone can double your risk of cardiovascular death.
And obesity?
And obesity is about, can increase about, depends on how heavy you are, about 2 to 3 or 4 times the normal range.
Let's go to Lee in Ghent. All right, Lee in Ghent. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Okay, Lee in Ghent, you're on.
Hello. I have a question for the doctor about the research that's been done. I went to a lecture by Dr. Blazer, who wrote a book called Missing Microbes, and the correlation between a healthy gut flora and obesity, because it was kind of amazing the correlations of heavily people that have taken a lot of antibiotics or have an altered gut flora and the prevalence of obesity.
Yes, there is some literature in the studies that indicate that if you change your gut flora, especially with antibiotic usage, there's some correlation that some people will start to gain weight. It's not clear to me that the gut flora alone is the significant cause of obesity. Now, we do use a lot of antibiotics. Ever since we invented antibiotics, we've been using it very frequently. So almost everybody's gut flora has changed, especially in pediatric patients. Their gut flora has changed because we use so much antibiotics for ear infections, respiratory infections. But we still see a fair amount of at least people with healthy weight. So I'm not entirely sure that the gut flora, we can kind of blame the gut flora as the main cause of obesity. Now, there are some genetic...
Yeah, some of the research he was doing was basically comparing people who have been born by cesarean that didn't have the advantage of the mother's vaginal flora when they were born, and he was seeing some direct correlations between that kind of healthy microbial community from someone who is at a regular vaginal birth. And I wasn't sure if you could comment on that.
I haven't seen that kind of study at this time. I'm sorry, I kind of haven't seen that.
Well, although it might explain my problems. Thanks very much, Lee. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology for over 30 years, providing comprehensive treatment of cancer and blood disorders. World-class care close to home, NewYorkOncology.com. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. The Wild Center, announcing the Wild Walk, 1,000 feet of elevated bridges and experiences in the Adirondack treetops, wildcenter.org for details. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. And from George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate trust and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region, 518-396-7974.
And we are here with Dr. Chi Chung. We are discussing weight control, among other things. He is, of course, an internist. You can ask him any internist question you want. And now's a great time to get in on it, because right now there are plenty of lines. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Chung, I guess here's the question for you of the moment. You know, a lot of people are now resorting to either the banding or the stapling of their stomachs. What is your general thought about all of this?
The banding has been quite popular for a while because it's a simpler procedure than gastric bypass. But it appears that from the data that we have collected over the years, the banding is significantly less effective than gastric bypass.
Which is otherwise known as stapling? No. Gastric bypass goes around the stomach.
Yes. Goes around the stomach. There's a procedure called gastric sleeve, which kind of make the stomach smaller, similar to gastric banding. And then there's the gastric bypass, which create a very, which bypass vast majority of the stomach, leaving just the beginning of the stomach, and most of the food goes into the small intestines. The gastric bypass, from the data we have, most people will lose about 30% of their weight. The gastric banding may be about 10 to 15% of the weight. And so most people will prefer to go with the gastric bypass. And I don't think many people do the gastric banding at this time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, and of course, the other question then becomes the recidivism, which is after somebody gets this, do they then relax and don't practice good, eating habits?
Well, most gastric bypass routine is that the patient comes in, they have significant weight, they want to lose some weight. The program will usually put them through a psychological evaluation to see whether they're ready to lose weight, and to put them through a diet program to kind of teach them how to eat better, and then go through the procedure. Now, soon after the procedure, we usually see a 50% weight drop, quite a significant.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, people will start gaining some weight back. So the net effect is about 30%. It is not clear, at least to me, and I think to a lot of people, why the procedure works so exceedingly well. It seems that it's more than the effect of reducing the size of the stomach, making you feel fuller sooner. Because the gastric banding, in principle, reduces the size of the stomach, but it doesn't achieve as much weight loss as the gastric bypass. It seems somehow the hormones secreted by the stomachs and the small bowel, part of the small bowel that has been bypassed, is involved, has been changed, causing the patients to feel less hungry and feel early fullness. So
do you think, Doctor? Do you think if people want to do this, they can? In other words, is the banding or the bypass the easy way out compared to just limiting calories?
Is that the easy way out? Well, that depends. When a patient comes to me, I look at their weight. They're significantly overweight. I don't automatically recommend that he or she seeks gastric bypass. Even if they're 400 or 300 pounds, I would try to help them lose weight through diet and exercise. And diet is the mainstay of weight loss.
Not exercise.
Not initially exercise. When a person comes in, I have to make sure that at least their blood pressure is okay at rest, and I may put them through a stress test to see what their blood pressure is when they exercise. Some of the very heavy patients have very high blood pressure when they exercise, and I want them to lose a few pounds. It appears that losing just 5 to 10% of your weight, your blood pressure will fall significantly. So when they exercise, they won't have some kind of a cardiac event. So I would encourage them to diet first, and we can talk about different diet programs, but they all seem to be equally effective.
Really?
Yes.
So the Atkins and this and that, they're all the same?
They are all fairly similar in terms of achieving the same amount of weight. So that's the good news for the patient, because we can work with the patient to see what kind of food they like to eat and try to work a diet around that rather than forcing them into one particular diet.
Okay, we'll go to Sid, my old friend Sid in Hadley. All right, Sid, you're on. Welcome. Hello, Sid. Hello, Sid, are you there?
Rather than forcing them into one...
Hello, Sid. Hey, Sid, you got to turn off the radio.
My old friend Sid in Hadley. All right, Sid, you're on.
Yep, I'm off the phone.
Okay,
now, Alan, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, and listen.
I wanted to ask the doctor something that I have found out. I am 89 years old. I wear the same size pants I wore in college. I bicycle every day. And the secret is that I know what goes into the shopping cart goes into my mouth. So I'm a shrewd shopper of not putting in the stuff that's dangerous. But I also love, I had an old student who said, every time I crave fast food, you know, the Burger Kings and the Macs, I fast. So I never go into one of those places, and I am gluten-free, which I think has made a big difference. Would the doctor please comment on any of that or ask any questions?
So let me get this clear. You don't eat fast food.
But, right.
But sometimes you have a craving for fast food?
No, I go right by it.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing everything you need to do. Your size hasn't changed since when you were younger. And you're exercising every day. You're eating the right kind of food that you're happy with. And I don't think there's anything that needs to be changed.
How about gluten? He mentioned gluten. He's gluten-free. There are some people who think that this has been overdone, this gluten business.
And a fad. Yes, they do. But when you get gluten-free, you don't do pizza. You don't do pasta as much.
That's true.
And you don't do any of the sugared cereals because you know that they're not in your gluten pattern.
Right. There is a trend that people think gluten-free is necessarily good. There's gluten. There's celiac disease, which people who who have sensitivities to gluten, and there's people who, when they eat gluten-free food, they feel better. They're not tested positive for celiac disease, but I let my patient know if that's how you feel better, that's fine. You can certainly eat gluten-free food. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm Asian, so. When I was born, we just have rice and vegetable. We hardly have any gluten, so.
Yeah, that's true. Incidentally, it improved my memory incredibly. When I found, before I was getting on, I was losing names of playwrights that I admired. I couldn't remember Arthur Miller's last name. But now, 3 years later, I got him down pat. And I always remember you, Alan, so thanks for being my 10th.
Well, your memory isn't so good where I'm concerned, because you said on the air that I'm one of the best students you ever had in the 10th grade. That was not true. So.
Well, who said grades were the best way to measure students' grades?
That's absolutely true. Sid Simon, I love you. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, bye. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So when you became an obesity specialist, when you earned that certification, doctor, what goes into becoming a specialist? What did you have to do to get certified as an obesity specialist?
Well, there's a course in Boston that I took. It's a week-long course. And then I went to study by myself and studied whatever text they gave me. And there's a certification exam. Actually, I took it right here in Albany. And then I passed.
Well, yeah, but are they looking for something in particular? I mean, what do you have to know?
Well, there's a lot of physiology. I mean, they talk about the physiology of obesity, the genetics of obesity. As far as genetics is concerned, there's only a few cases of genetic disorder that people.
So, if your mother was fat, are you going to be fat?
Not necessarily. Now, it's interesting that people who are in an environment where everybody is a little heavier have trouble losing the weight. I think they find it difficult to be the exceptions of their groups. So if your whole family is heavy and you want to lose weight, then you're going to have to eat differently and you're going to have to do all kinds of activities. And your family may look at you and say, what are you doing? So I find that people who are in a heavy environment have a harder time losing weight.
I don't know. Sometimes I walk down the street, I see, you know, a mother who is quite obese, and I see the kid who looks like a scale model to the mother, walking right next to the mother.
Well, that's good. That we are hoping that actually with with more public awareness that children who are growing up have more activities so they don't gain weight. Now we have better school lunches. We encourage kids to go to sports. So that's the hope. There's some question whether that is improving overall over the generations, but we're hoping that's working.
Okay. That's great. Let's go to Sarah in Pittsfield. All right. Sarah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
So far, so good.
So I had a question for the doctor. I work for a local neurologist, and we are seeing, cases of people who have done the surgery, the bypass surgery. And although they were screened before the surgery and they were cleared, we're finding that from a neurological standpoint, there seem to be multiple issues, like whole body issues that our patients are running into after the surgery. So although they've lost the weight, maybe they're not feeling so issues like fibromyalgia or lots of fatigue. And even with all the adjustments, we're finding maybe there were some underlying issues that maybe the surgery triggered. Do you have any comment on that or any patients in your own experience?
I have several patients who has gastric bypass. But usually right after gastric bypass, we monitor their electrolytes, their chemistries, as well as the vitamin level status fairly closely, at least initially for the first few years, because sometimes we would find that to be low. And some of these vitamins, especially the B vitamins, when they run a little low, we can get neuropathy, such as tingling sensations, cognitive declines. So those are the things we have to check carefully. I'm not sure what kind of neurological disorder that you...
Yeah, no, I mean, you're kind of hitting the hot topics. So definitely neuropathy, lots of numbness and tingling, some memory decline, definitely.
Right.
And then just generalized fibromyalgia symptoms. So lots of fatigue and just feeling very run down, headaches even, that some of these issues seem to be quite chronic, that were not chronic prior to the surgery at all. But after the bypass surgery, we're finding that we're really struggling trying to get patients comfortable after such a large surgery.
So that's the first thing I would do, kind of screen them for multiple vitamin deficiency or just low vitamins. Zinc sometimes runs low too. Selenium sometimes runs low. Thiamine is an important vitamin.
Yep.
So is B12s and folates. Oftentimes that runs a little low. Iron level also sometimes runs low as well, causing them to have restless leg and they can't sleep well. And that could trigger all kinds of problems.
So, okay. Thank you for taking the time.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Coming around the horn here, let's go to Sue in Johnstown. All right, Sue, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question concerns thyroid function and weight loss.
Thyroid can impact on weight. If your thyroid is running low, that means your metabolism is on the low side and you will slowly gain weight. If your thyroid is excessive, you have excessive thyroid hormones, you can lose a few pounds or you can be anxious, you can have palpitations.
And when your thyroid has been removed and weight loss, talk about that.
When your thyroid
weight gain.
Oh, when your thyroid is removed, the next thing is that there should be thyroid replacement therapy. You will be given a pills to give you some kind of exogenous thyroid hormones. It is, if it's adjusted appropriately, you shouldn't have any significant weight change. You can kind of, the range of the thyroid lab is quite fairly large, so there's some room generally to manipulate the amount of dosing to, if there's a kind of a slow weight gain, you might increase it a little bit and still keep it in the normal range.
Okay. Sue, are you done?
All right.
Thank you, Sue.
Yes, I am. Thank you so much.
Right.
Sure.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to John in Troy. All right, John, you're on.
How you doing?
So far, so good. Don't make us mad. Go ahead.
I'm curious on what the doctor thinks about probiotics with aging. Supposedly, what I've been reading, as you get older, you don't digest as well, and some people think some probiotics would be, as a supplement, would help you digest better.
Well, that's a good question. There was an earlier caller calling about antibiotic changing the bacteria gut flora. And usually now when we give antibiotics, we would sometimes ask the patient to take some kind of probiotics, either in a pill form or as some kind of a yogurt. Usually I don't necessarily recommend a probiotics if you're digesting fine. There's no particular reason to take a probiotic if you don't have any digestive trouble. If you have some, they're relatively benign, they're inexpensive. You can try some and see whether that helps you or not. Digestive trouble in an elderly patient, if I'm not saying you're elderly, but usually in an older person, should be evaluated after a couple of weeks if you don't get any result. Because it can signify some other problems in the digestive tracts.
Okay, thank you. All right, I want to just react to one email we got. It says, at my thinnest, I was 5'4 and 140 pounds. I was swimming a few miles a day, 5 days a week. I still had a 30% body fat. So it was not muscle mass. The question then, doctor, is it possible to be fit and fat?
That's a good question. There's actually some debate going on whether being obese, but if you're fit, will nullify the health risk of obesity. It seems to, at least the study comes down to, yes, if you're fit, you will reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease, but it doesn't completely eliminate the higher health hazards of obesity. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can be fit and obese, and it will be better than just being obese. So it's better to be fit and thin.
So when you use the word fit, doctor, what are you talking about?
We're talking about, at least the general guideline, is about 20 to 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise where your heart rate goes up about 3 times a week. There's many ways to measure, to define obesities and such. There's the body mass index, which is your weight divided by your height square. And there's the waist circumference, which we think is sometimes better than just the BMI, partly because there are some people whose BMI is high, but when you see them, actually they are all muscles. And there are some people whose BMI is lower, but they are mostly, they have central obesity, they have kind of a big pot belly. And so sometimes measuring the waist circumference will give us a better idea of how much fat they have.
Well, we're talking to Dr. Chi Chung of Community Health Programs Adams Internist. We'll be back in a moment.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, providing specialty practices including cardiology, primary care, hematology and oncology, outpatient infusion, lab and imaging at their Malta campus. SaratogaHospital.org for information. Brattleboro Retreat, offering an LGBT inpatient program providing mental health and addiction services for LGBT adults. BrattleboroRetreat.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland. 518-432-0358. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're rounding the horn here to the end of the show. We'll go to Helena. Where is she anyway? In West Hurley. Helena, you're on. Or is it Helena?
Okay, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh.
My biggest concern with the food industry is the overuse of high fructose corn syrup. Mm-hmm. I just wish they would use sugar. I can read it. I can understand it. But this high fructose corn syrup is just too prevalent. I'd like to know the doctor's opinion on that.
High fructose corn syrup is essentially fructose concentrated into a syrup. It's not clear that the fact that we're concentrating fructose causes people to gain more weight than if you eat the equivalent amount of sugar. So the World Health Organization has looked at this and say, look, we're just going to limit the sugar content. Doesn't matter whether you have syrup, either maple syrup or artificial syrups, or whether you have plain sugar, brown sugar, cane sugar, whatever sugar you use, as long as the amount of sugar is less than 25 grams. Now, there's one exception, though. You can have as much fruit as you want, and the sugar content in the fruit does not count towards your 25 grams.
And why is that?
There's a reason, partly because if you drink a glass of orange juice, the sugar content in the orange juice will count toward that 25 grams.
Correct, correct, right.
But if you eat the equivalent amount of oranges, that doesn't count.
Now, do you know what that's about?
The reason is that in order to eat the equivalent amount of oranges secreted in the juice, you have to eat quite many. So they realized that eating the oranges will give you fibers, other nutrients, and it's very hard for a person to sit down and eat 5 or 6 oranges in one go. Yeah. So most people will just have one and feel full. Mm. And that's a lot less sugar than the glass of orange juice.
That's the Allen way of doing it.
Right. Like whole foods is the answer for good health.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the food industry does put a lot of sugar into the food.
Okay, listen, thank you. Okay, now we have to examine what we're doing here. We'll go to Tracy in Rensselaer. Okay, Tracy, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Doctor, you had mentioned with a previous caller restless leg syndrome and referenced a vitamin deficiency. I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about that.
Vitamin deficiency is sometimes common. You know, after gastric bypass, sometimes people will have trouble even taking a pill. So a lot of vitamins comes in a pill form in terms of supplements, and some of the daily vitamins are actually quite large. So we do notice that when patients have gastric bypass, they may be lacking vitamins, certain vitamins like B12 and thiamines and folate. The stomach is responsible for absorbing the iron content. So if you bypass that, you might be lacking iron. Now, there's a lot of food that has iron in it, vegetables, meat in particular, eggs and milk all have iron in there. So if you're not losing blood anywhere, and most of the time when they're a little low, just a small amount of supplement will do the trick. If you are noticed to be low in iron despite supplementations, oftentimes we would ask the patients to be evaluated for iron deficiency anemia and make sure there's no other cause than just lack of absorption after the gastric bypass surgery.
Thank you, Tracy. Appreciate it. All right. 1-800-348-2551. Lots of spaces here. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Liz. Yeah, Liz in Westtown, New York. All right, Liz, you're on. You're on, Liz.
Hello, good afternoon. So my question is, people with type 1 diabetes longstanding, like 49, 50 years, and have gained a lot of weight, how do you try to put together a weight loss program?
Type 1 diabetes, if you have diabetes, you have to talk to the endocrinologist to try to lose weight slowly. That way we can, do you have a pump by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, I do.
So since you have a pump, you can talk to your endocrinologist that I want to lose weight, and you have to decide how much weight you want to lose.
Doctor, could you just interject here? I'm sorry, to explain what the pump does.
Many type 1 diabetic patients will have an external device where insulin is stored in the device, and the device is programmable so it can inject a certain amount of insulin depending on the time of the day. So if a person eats 3 meals a day regularly, the device can be programmed to provide a small amount of insulin before the meal, so it will cover the slightly high sugar the person gets when they eat the meals. So a pump is very convenient for many patients, and if the patient has kind of different types of meal schedules, you can also program it to do that. But as the pump is programmable, you can reduce the basal rate a little bit as you lose weight. But you have to lose the weight, see the weight loss a little bit at a time. Now, I recommend just losing about a pound every week or every 10 days. And you have to talk to the endocrinologist there carefully so you don't overshoot. Because if you lose weight too fast, what happens is that your insulin may be too much for you.
And you have low blood sugar.
And then you have low blood sugar. Low blood sugar is actually worse than high blood sugar because low blood sugar, you can pass out and fall and hurt yourself. So losing weight in a person with type 1 diabetes, you should coordinate with your endocrinologist to try to carefully monitor the amount of weight you lose. Now I also have cancer.
So you do not work with people with type 1. You send them to their endocrinologist.
Yeah, I don't know how to program the pump. So I can't adjust your pump in my office.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Yep. Okay, so now we're going to go to Nancy in Niskayuna. All right, Nancy in Niskayuna, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wondered, with regard to the gastric bypass, there's so many long-term effects, and one of them I've read about is dumping syndrome, which is supposed to affect fully one-third of patients who have that surgery and cause long-term malnutrition problems. So I was kind of interested in your slant on you know, how when patients are possibly suggested that they should have that surgery, often they're required to lose 10% on a special diet before they'll go through with the surgery. And why not just keep the patient on that diet instead of doing this potentially very dangerous surgery with potentially long-term consequences that are not reversible?
Yes.
Why not just keep them on that diet?
I agree with you. Once the dumping syndrome started, it's sometimes very hard to control that, even with medications. So when the patient comes in, you know, no matter how heavy they are, we would try diet first. If they start losing, you know, diet usually lose about 5 to 10% of your weight, averaging about 8%. And once they lost that 8% or 5% of their weight, they feel a little bit better. I would ask them at that point to increase their activities level. You know, start doing some exercise, and help them lose another maybe 5% of their weight. And after that, I would consider medication if it's necessary to achieve a further weight reductions. Now, having said all that, if you're 500 pounds and you start having heart disease, hypertension, and diabetes, diet and exercise can only go so far. So at that point, in order to achieve a better outcome for the patient, sometimes they would recommend gastric bypass. For most people, we would try the diet and exercise and perhaps medications. And you're right, dumping syndrome is a terrible side effect of gastric bypass, very difficult to control, and oftentimes is worse than having the patients being just having extra weight.
And what is dumping syndrome one more time?
Dumping syndrome is a kind of uncontrollable diarrhea. So everything you eat, it comes out in this watery stools. It is as if you're not absorbing any kind of nutrients. Mm. It control is hard, and sometimes it will go away by itself, but sometimes it doesn't go away and becomes a permanent aspect of the person's life.
Okay. Anything else?
No, thank you very much.
And thank you very much. Right. All right. Okay, so now we'll go to Beth in Montgomery. Beth in Montgomery, you're on. Hello, Beth? Well, maybe not. Okay. And let's go to Margaret in Albany. All right. Margaret in Albany, you're on.
Hi. Earlier, a caller had mentioned a symptom that had to do with a numbness and tingling, and I couldn't quite catch the name. Nipology?
I'm not sure. I did mention numbness and tingling sensations.
Okay. Well, I think I might. I actually have an issue with that, and I went to the doctor, and they weren't able to tell me much about it. And I was wondering if that is a symptom related to diet. I do have a diet in that I don't consume dairy or meat. And like I said, I did visit the doctor about the issue, and no one really could give me any answers. But I didn't know if maybe you could tell me a little more about that.
Numbing and tingling sensation, especially in the hands and feet, can be symptoms of many things. Many things can cause that.
It's in my toes.
It's in your toes. Okay. Well, first of all, poor circulation can sometimes cause numbing and tingling sensations. Sometimes if you're pre-diabetes, we know that patients who are not diabetics but have slightly high sugars, we know some of those patients have started to develop numbness and tingling sensation because of nerve damage from the slightly high sugar. So you may not have an official diagnosis of diabetes. You may just have pre-diabetes, and that could also cause what we call neuropathy, kind of a catch-all term.
That was it, neuropathy.
Neuropathy. So, and vitamin deficiency, if you restrict your diet to certain types of food, vitamin B12 and folates are generally fortified in most cereal products and most food in the United States. They're fortified. So most people don't have that, but if you restrict your food to a certain type, you can be deficient in those. Thiamine deficiency can also cause a numbness and tingling sensations, and checking that sometimes will result in a low state, and you can supplement and your numbness and tingling sensation will go away. But if you cannot find the real cause, and sometimes a check to the neurologist will be important to find out what is the cause of that tingling sensation you have.
Okay.
Great. Thank you for the advice. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, very quickly, we'll try Beth again and see if she's there this time. Beth, are you there?
Hi, it's me again?
Yeah, is that you? What do you want?
Yes, I got lost. All right, I've had radiation damage in my lower intestine and my ileum. I have inflammation. What can I do holistically
rather than taking steroids to bring down or at least help the inflammation.
So you have radiation to your intestines?
Yes, ileum? I had a hysterectomy.
Okay.
And I had that cancer.
Okay.
So this is the byproduct.
Oh, okay. So you have radiation side effects. That sometimes can be difficult to treat. As far as holistic treatments,
gluten-free and it doesn't work sometimes. It's sporadic. Everything is sporadic. Nothing is 100%.
It comes and goes, huh? There's no particular, I don't know of any holistic method of treating radiation's side effects affecting the gut. The only thing I could recommend is just eat a proper diet and see how that works. The terminal ileum is responsible for absorbing some of the vitamins and irons necessary. So that's one thing you can look at. As far as
B12 shots every month.
Yeah, the B12 shots, that should help maintain your B12 levels. But you having diarrhea with the
sometimes too. Yes, it depends on, you know, it doesn't depend on what I eat. It seems it just happens to me. I follow a diet from my doctor, but she wants me to go on these steroids. But they have awful side effects. They have bone problems and things, but, you know, I don't need any more problems. I have enough problems.
Okay, hold on. We are running out of time, so we're going to let the doctor have the last word here. Go ahead, doctor.
Well, I agree with your doctor that steroid may be a solution to your problems. There are different kinds of steroids, though. You're right. The steroid that we most commonly use are prednisone that affects the whole body. There are certain types of steroids just aim at the gut inflammation that is localized in that area. So those types of steroids may be of use to you because it won't affect as much of the other, the bones and other things.
Now, doctor, I know this may seem impolite, but that's all the time we have, and I thank you so much for all you've done today. We're just that bad out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in, apologize to those who left on the line. I'd also like to thank our wonderful guest, Dr. Chi Chong, for joining us today. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Current Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, currentcompliance.com. Thanks again for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Ray Graff. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.